Welcome to this deep dive where we try to make sense of complex legal topics. Today, we're looking at a really pivotal case, United States v. California. It's a 2019 Ninth Circuit decision.
That's right.
And it really highlights this constant push and pull, you know, between federal power and state power, especially when it comes to immigration law. You sent over some great materials on this. And, well, our goal is to unpack the key legal issues, the outcomes, especially for law students trying to get their heads around federalism and immigration.
Exactly. And this case, it really centered on three California laws from back in 2017. These laws were basically trying to limit how much state and local governments got involved in federal immigration enforcement.
So not California setting its own immigration policy, but more about where they draw the line on helping the feds.
Precisely. People often call these sanctuary policies, but in practice, it's about things like limiting how much local police will voluntarily help ICE, for instance. The idea is often to build trust with immigrant communities so they don't fear local cops acting like immigration agents.
Okay, so the state drawing a line. Let's get specific. What did these laws actually do? Maybe start with AB 450.
Sure. AB 450, it had two main things. First, it said employers in California had to give their workers 72 hours notice before any federal immigration inspection at the worksite.
72 hours.
Okay. Yeah. And second, it limited how much employers could cooperate with ICE immigration and customs enforcement if ICE didn't have a judicial warrant. So, you know, warning employees and needing a warrant for certain cooperation.
Right, right. A heads up for the workers and sounds like trying to make sure there's a proper legal basis for things. What about the next one, AB 103?
AB 103 gave the California Attorney General the power to inspect federal immigration detention facilities in California. The thinking was state oversight, you know?
Yeah.
Checking on conditions, treatment, due process inside these federal facilities located on state ground.
Mm-hmm, okay. Like a state watchdog role over federal detention centers. Interesting. And then the big one, SB 54, the California Values Act. I remember that making waves. What was its main thrust?
Yeah, SB 54 was probably the broadest. It really aimed to limit cooperation between state and local police and federal immigration authorities. Things like sharing info on when someone's getting released from jail, honoring those federal detainer requests, you know, asking jails to hold people longer for ICE, and just generally not helping with federal immigration stuff unless there was a warrant. It was trying to create, well, separation between local policing and federal immigration work.
Okay, yeah, you can definitely see why the federal government might have issues with these. So what was their legal argument? How did they challenge California in court?
Well, their challenge had two main legs. First, they said these laws were preempted by federal immigration law because of the Supremacy Clause. You know, federal law trumps conflicting state law.
Right, Supremacy Clause.
Yeah.
Standard argument.
And second, they argued the laws violated something called intergovernmental immunity.
Intergovernmental immunity. Okay, let's unpack that a bit. What's the basic idea there?
Basically, it means states can't pass laws that unfairly burden or discriminate against the federal government or its operations. It's like a principle of mutual respect. Neither level of government should stop the other from doing its legitimate job.
Got it. So one level can't just like deliberately trip up the other. Okay. So the feds sue California. What happened at the first step, the district court?
It was a bit of a split decision. The district court did block parts of AB 450, specifically the bit stopping employers from cooperating with ICE without a warrant.
Okay.
But it mostly upheld the rest of AB 450, most of AB 103, and importantly, all of SB 54.
So the feds got some of what they wanted, but California won on SB 54 initially, which naturally led to an appeal to the Ninth Circuit. So what were the key questions for them? Same arguments again.
Pretty much, yeah. The Ninth Circuit had to look at those same two core issues. Were these laws preempted by federal law? And did they violate intergovernmental immunity? They had to analyze each law, AB 450, AB 103, SB 54, through those two legal filters.
Okay, let's walk through the Ninth Circuit's decision then, starting with AB 450 again. What about that part requiring employers to warn employees about inspections?
The Ninth Circuit agreed with the district court on that. They upheld the employee notification rule. Their logic was basically, well, federal law doesn't say employers can't tell their employees about inspections. They didn't see a direct conflict, and just giving notice wasn't seen as really stopping the federal government from doing its job.
But didn't you say part of AB 450 was struck down? Which part was that and why?
Right. It was the other part, the provisions that stopped employers from cooperating with ICE without a warrant, like needing a warrant just to let ICE into non-public areas of the workplace. The Ninth Circuit said that violated intergovernmental immunity.
Why immunity there?
Because California was demanding a warrant specifically for IC, but not necessarily for other law enforcement agencies in similar situations. The court saw that as discriminating against federal operations, singling out ICE for a special burden. It was interfering too much with federal functions.
Ah, okay. So just telling employees is okay, but putting up unique roadblocks just for federal immigration agents, that makes sense. What about AB 103, the facility inspections? How did the Ninth Circuit rule on that?
Mostly, they upheld AB 103 too. They pointed to the state's traditional police powers, the state's basic authority to protect the health, safety, and welfare of people within its borders.
Mm-hmm.
The court figured that checking on conditions in detention centers, even federal ones, falls under that state interest. It's about safeguarding people physically present in California.
Okay, mostly upheld. I'm sensing a but coming. Was there a part of AB 103 that didn't make it?
Yes, exactly. Oh. There was one specific bit they invalidated. It was a requirement for the state to review how detainees were apprehended and transferred to federal custody in the first place.
And why was that a problem?
Again, intergovernmental immunity. The Ninth Circuit felt that part uniquely targeted the initial actions of federal law enforcement. There wasn't a similar state review for how state or local police make arrests, so it looked like the state trying to second-guess and interfere with core federal enforcement functions in a way it didn't do for its own agencies.
Gotcha. So scrutinizing the conditions inside was okay under police powers, but scrutinizing the federal process of getting people there was seen as targeting the feds. Okay, last one. SB 54, the Values Act, the big one. What did the Ninth Circuit say?
SB 54. Upheld entirely. And the key reason was the 10th Amendment and the anti-commandeering doctrine.
Anti-commandeering. Okay, that's a huge concept for federalism, isn't it? Remind us what that means.
Absolutely. It comes from Supreme Court cases like New York and Prince. Basically, it says the federal government can't force state governments to use their own resources, their legislatures, their police officers, to carry out federal programs. The feds can regulate, sure, but they generally can't make the states do the enforcing for them.
So the feds can't just boss the states around and make them enforce federal law?
Pretty much. They can't commandeer the state's machinery.
Okay, so how did the Ninth Circuit apply that idea to SB 54, the law limiting state police cooperation with ICE?
They said SB 54 was just California choosing not to voluntarily help federal immigration enforcement. The court stressed, look, SB 54 isn't stopping federal agents from enforcing immigration law in California. ICE can still operate.
Right.
But the law reflects California's decision. Our state and local cops won't actively help or spend their resources on federal immigration tasks unless there's a warrant. The court saw this as California exercising its 10th Amendment right, the right to decide how its own personnel and resources are used, and to say no to being forced to carry out federal directives.
So the crucial distinction was California isn't blocking ICE, it's just deciding not to help ICE with state resources. That's a really key difference.
Exactly. The Ninth Circuit made it clear. SB 54 is a state policy choice about its own operational priorities, not a legal roadblock for the federal government itself.
Okay, let's quickly recap the Ninth Circuit's rulings then. AB 450, employee notice, okay, but restricting employer cooperation without a warrant, struck down, immunity. AB 103, facility inspections, mostly okay, police power, but reviewing how people were arrested, struck down, immunity.
Yeah.
And SB 54, upheld entirely based on anti-commandeering.
That's a perfect summary, nails the key outcomes for each law.
So, stepping back, what's the big picture takeaway from United States v. California? Why should law students really pay attention to this case? What does it teach us about federalism?
Well, it's a fantastic real-world example of how this federalism stuff plays out. It shows states can regulate in their traditional areas like labor law, health, and safety, even if it indirectly affects federal goals.
Mm-hmm.
But, and this is a big but, states cannot pass laws that single out and discriminate against federal operations. That line between an indirect effect and a discriminatory burden is really, really important.
That line seems critical.
Yeah.
Indirect impact versus discriminatory burden.
Definitely. And for law students, it highlights these core constitutional ideas. Anti-commandeering, that's a real shield for states resisting federal mandates. Intergovernmental immunity, that protects the federal government from being unfairly targeted by states. And it also reinforces that preemption, the idea that federal law overrides state law. It has a high bar. You usually need a direct conflict, not just, you know, the state law making the feds' job harder.
So mere inconvenience for the federal government isn't enough for preemption. It needs a real conflict or that discriminatory burden. This has been super helpful. Thanks for breaking down such a complex case.
My pleasure. It's a really fascinating intersection of law and policy, and this case just captures so many of those tensions.
Yeah, it really drives home that federalism isn't just theory, right? It's this ongoing negotiation, especially in sensitive areas like immigration. It makes you think about the practical side. What are the consequences of these rulings on the ground? How does this shape how states and the feds interact, especially when their priorities don't align? Definitely food for thought.